Armstrong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, I report on a United Nations study on human development around the world. Dr. Jill answers a grammar question from a listener. And we listen to The Lady or the Tiger by Frank R. Stockton. But first,
bells rang across Britain on Friday, and mourners gathered in London and other places to honor Queen Elizabeth II. She died Thursday at the age of 96, after 70 years as the country's ruler. Around the world, her exceptional reign is being remembered, celebrated, and debated. Many are also considering what the future will look like with the new king, Charles III. The British monarchy's rules state that a new sovereign succeeds to the throne as soon as his or her predecessor dies. So, as Elizabeth's first son, Charles became king immediately upon her death. Charles has spent much of his 73 years preparing to be king. On his first full day of duties, the king met in London with Prime Minister Liz Truss. Queen Elizabeth had officially appointed Truss earlier in the week. Charles arrived at Buckingham Palace, the monarch's London home, to cheers from crowds nearby. His wife, Camilla, now Queen Consort, was by his side. Shouts of, "Well done, Charlie," were heard. The crowd began singing the national song, "God Save the King." One woman gave Charles a kiss on the cheek. Later Friday, Charles gave his first speech to the nation as king. He said he feels profound sorrow over the death of his mother and promised to carry on her lifelong service to the nation. His speech was broadcast on television and streamed at St. Paul's Cathedral, where some 2,000 people were attending a service of remembrance for the Queen. Mourners at the service included Truss and members of her government. The new king is expected to travel around the country in the coming days. The Queen's body will be brought to London to lie in state before a funeral at Westminster Abbey, expected around September 19th. As prince, Charles lost some public support when he and the late Princess Diana ended their marriage. Some also say he stretched the rules that bar the monarchy from intervening in public affairs. He entered into public debate on issues such as environmental protection and preservation of historic buildings. Charles's rise to the throne is likely to fuel debate about the future of Britain's monarchy. Some see the monarchy as a sign of national unity, and others as an outdated system that should end. Charles, who will be head of state for Britain and 14 other countries, including Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and Papua New Guinea, has defended his past actions. He has said his interest and involvement in public issues was aimed at motivating people or moving them to take action. Charles also said, however, that as king, he would not be able to interfere in politics because a sovereign's duties are different from those of the Prince of Wales. He has said he plans to reduce costs for the monarchy and better represent modern Britain. His mother was Britain's longest ruling monarch. She represented dependability during many crises that affected her, the monarchy, and the country. Whether Charles will be as loved by his subjects as was Queen Elizabeth II remains to be seen. I'm Katie Weaver.
A report published by the United Nations Development Program, or UNDP, finds that progress in human development has halted or gone backward. The UN study was released Thursday. It cites the COVID-19 pandemic, climate change, economic uncertainty, and other crises as the main reasons for the lack of progress. The report includes the UNDP's Human Development Index. The index ranks 191 countries in the world based on health, education level, and standard of living. It found that 90% of the nations failed to reach a better, healthier, or more secure life for their people in 2020 and 2021. For the first time in 32 years, the index found that human development decreased for 2 straight years. This year's rankings show some countries are beginning to improve. Others face worsening crises. The report finds Latin America, the Caribbean, Sub-Saharan Africa, and South Asia have been especially hard hit. Achim Steiner is the head of UNDP. 9 out of 10 countries in this year's Human Development Report Index are shown to have faced a decline, he said. This has never happened before, even during the last devastating global moment of crisis, the financial crisis. Only 1 out of 10 countries faced a decline in human development indices. Switzerland is at the top of this year's rankings. That is followed by Norway, Iceland, Hong Kong, Australia, and other wealthy nations. Countries from sub-Saharan Africa are among the lowest ranked in human development, with South Sudan at the bottom. Pedro Conceição is the report's lead author. He said that economic recession is the main driver behind the decline in human development. There has also been a large drop in life expectancy. Conceição also said the report shows global levels of trust are the lowest on record. He said those who are most mistrustful hold the most extreme political opinions. Uncertainty and the feeling of insecurity hardens people's commitments to a group that shares a similar set of beliefs and increases hostility to other groups that think differently, Conceição said. He added that the report documents that democratic practices are under stress.
This week, we answer a question from Sahador.
I have a question about when we use in, on, and at. I don't know when to use them. Thank you, Sahador.
Dear Sahador, thank you for writing to us. These little words cause a lot of trouble for English learners. They are called prepositions. One purpose of prepositions in English is to show the relationship between two or more things in time or place. These three words do follow some basic rules. It may be easier to think of them separately. Let's begin with location or place. The first rule is to think of whether the place is general or exact. Here is an example of a general place, a city.
I live in Washington, D.C.
We use in with cities, countries, neighborhoods, and places with a clear boundary or dividing line. Now, let us add some detail with our next example.
I live on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C.
This shows that you can use on for streets. We are moving from the general, a city, to a more specific location, a street. If we add the intersection or cross street, we are adding more detail. That is, we are talking about an exact location, and we must use at.
I live at the corner of 16th Street and Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C.
Now you know the exact place the speaker lives and can guess that it might be the U.S. President, who lives at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
When you want to talk about a time something happens, you can also use in, on, and at. I have a friend who is getting married soon. I can begin talking about the event this way.
Caroline's wedding is in September.
I use in because this is general information. Use in for months, years, and parts of days, such as morning or afternoon. Getting more specific, I can use on and the day of the week.
Caroline's wedding is on Saturday, September 24th.
Finally, we can add the time and use at.
Caroline's wedding is on Saturday, September 24th at 1 p.m.
I hope this helps you to use these little words with more confidence, Sahador. Just remember them in order, in, on, at, and that they help you go from general to exact information.
What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Andrew Smith.
We present the short story, The Lady or the Tiger, by Frank R. Stockton. Here is Barbara Klein with the story.
Long ago, in a very olden time, there lived a powerful king. Some of his ideas were progressive, but others caused people to suffer. One of the king's ideas was a public arena as an agent of poetic justice. Crime was punished or innocence was decided by the result of chance. When a person was accused of a crime, his future would be judged in the public arena. All the people would gather in this building. The king sat high up on his ceremonial chair. He gave a sign. A door under him opened. The accused person stepped out into the arena. Directly opposite the king were two doors. They were side by side, exactly alike. The person on trial had to walk directly to these doors and open one of them. He could open whichever door he pleased. If the accused man opened one door, out came a hungry tiger, the fiercest in the land. The tiger immediately jumped on him and tore him to pieces as punishment for his guilt. The case of the suspect was thus decided. Iron bells rang sadly. Great cries went up from the paid mourners, and the people, with heads hanging low and sad hearts, slowly made their way home. They mourned greatly that one so young and fair, or so old and respected, should have died this way. But if the accused opened the other door, there came forth from it a woman, chosen especially for the person. To this lady he was immediately married in honor of his innocence. It was not a problem that he might already have a wife and family, or that he might have chosen to marry another woman. The king permitted nothing to interfere with his great method of punishment and reward. Another door opened under the king, and a clergyman, singers, dancers, and musicians joined the man and the lady. The marriage ceremony was quickly completed. Then the bells made cheerful noises. The people shouted happily, and the innocent man led the new wife to his home, following children who threw flowers on their path. This was the king's method of carrying out justice. Its fairness appeared perfect. The accused person could not know which door was hiding the lady. He opened either as he pleased, without knowing whether, in the next minute, he was to be killed or married. Sometimes the fierce animal came out of one door. Sometimes it came out of the other. This method was a popular one. When the people gathered together on one of the great trial days, they never knew whether they would see a bloody killing or a happy ending. So everyone was always interested. And the thinking part of the community would bring no charge of unfairness against this plan. Did not the accused person have the whole matter in his own hands? The king had a beautiful daughter who was like him in many ways. He loved her above all humanity. The princess secretly loved a young man who was the best-looking and bravest in the land. But he was a commoner, not part of an important family. One day, the king discovered the relationship between his daughter and the young man. The man was immediately put in prison. A day was set for his trial in the king's public arena. This, of course, was an especially important event. Never before had a common subject been brave enough to love the daughter of the king. The king knew that the young man would be punished, even if he opened the right door. And the king would take pleasure in watching the series of events, which would judge whether or not the man had done wrong in loving the princess. The day of the trial arrived. From far and near, the people gathered in the arena and outside its walls. The king and his advisors were in their places opposite the two doors. All was ready. The sign was given. The door under the king opened, and the lover of the princess entered the arena. Tall, beautiful, and fair, his appearance was met with a sound of approval and tension. Half the people had not known so perfect a young man lived among them. No wonder the princess loved him. What a terrible thing for him to be there. As the young man entered the public arena, he turned to bend to the king. But he did not at all think of the great ruler. The young man's eyes instead were fixed on the princess, who sat to the right of her father. From the day it was decided that the sentence of her lover should be decided in the arena, she had thought of nothing but this event. The princess had more power, influence, and force of character than anyone who had ever before been interested in such a case. She had done what no other person had done. She had possessed herself of the secret of the doors. She knew behind which door stood the tiger and behind which waited the lady. Gold and the power of a woman's will had brought the secret to the princess. She also knew who the lady was. The lady was one of the loveliest in the kingdom. Now and then, the princess had seen her looking at and talking to the young man. The princess hated the woman behind that silent door. She hated her with all the intensity of the blood passed to her through long lines of cruel ancestors. Her lover turned to look at the princess. His eye met hers as she sat there, paler and whiter than anyone in the large ocean of tense faces around her. He saw that she knew behind which door waited the tiger and behind which stood the lady. He had expected her to know it. The only hope for the young man was based on the success of the princess in discovering this mystery. When he looked at her, he saw that she had been successful, as he knew she would succeed. Then his quick and tense look asked the question, "Which?" It was as clear to her as if he shouted it from where he stood. There was not time to be lost. The princess raised her hand and made a short, quick movement toward the right. No one but her lover saw it. Every eye but his was fixed on the man in the arena. He turned, and with a firm and quick step, he walked across the empty space. Every heart stopped beating. Every breath was held. Every eye was fixed upon that man. He went to the door on the right and opened it. Thank you. Now, the point of the story is this. Did the tiger come out of that door, or did the lady? The more we think about this question, the harder it is to answer. It involves a study of the human heart. Think of it not as if the decision of the question depended upon yourself, but as if it depended upon that hot-blooded princess, her soul at a white heat under the fires of sadness and jealousy. She had lost him, but who should have him? How often in her waking hours and in her dreams had she started in wild terror and covered her face with her hands? She thought of her lover opening the door on the other side of which waited the sharp teeth of the tiger. But how much oftener had she seen him open the other door? How she had ground her teeth and torn her hair when she had seen his happy face as he opened the door of the lady. How her soul had burned in pain when she had seen him run to meet that woman with her look of victory. When she had seen the two of them get married, and when she had seen them walk away together upon their path of flowers, followed by the happy shouts of the crowd, in which her one sad cry was lost. Would it not be better for him to die quickly and go to wait for her in that blessed place of the future? And yet, that tiger, those cries, that blood! Her decision had been shown quickly, but it had been made after days and nights of thought. She had known she would be asked, and she had decided what she would answer, and she had moved her hand to the right. The question of her decision is one not to be lightly considered, and it is not for me to set myself up as the one person able to answer it. And so I leave it with all of you. Which came out of the open door? The lady or the tiger?
You have heard the American story, The Lady or the Tiger, by Frank R. Stockton. Your storyteller was Barbara Klein. This story was adapted into Special English by Shelley Gollist. It was produced by LaJuan Davis. Listen again next week for another American story in VOA Special English. I'm Bob Doty.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.